Hello, and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a featured original research article by Wolf et al., discussing death by neurologic criteria in pediatrics, opportunities and challenges for families and clinicians. Objectives. This pilot investigation aims to 1. Determine public understanding of brain death and death by neurologic criteria, 2. Identify approaches that may help families understand the concept and process of brain death and death by neurologic criteria determination, and 3. Contribute recommendations to a future brain death or death by neurologic criteria toolkit. Design. Multi-center mixed method study of patient and family advisory council members carried out during 2024. Setting. Four children's hospitals in the United States. Subjects, patient and family advisory council members. Interventions. Following an introductory patient and family advisory council meeting outlining the study objectives, we distributed surveys to patient and family advisory council members to assess baseline understanding of brain death and death by neurologic criteria. At a subsequent patient and family advisory council meeting, investigators provided education on brain death and death by neurologic criteria, presented case scenarios, and led focus groups to explore content and resources of potential benefit to a future brain death and death by neurologic criteria determination family toolkit. Thematic content analysis was used to summarize meeting field notes. Measurements and main results. 30 members completed the online survey and 55 participated in focus groups. Among survey respondents, 8 of 30 were familiar with the term death by neurologic criteria, 3 of 30 knew how brain death or death by neurologic criteria is diagnosed, and 8 of 30 understood the distinctions between brain death and death by neurologic criteria, coma, and persistent vegetative state. Focus groups highlighted facilitators to effective family discussions, including 1. Cultural sensitivity, 2. Multidisciplinary team involvement or availability, 3. Empathetic communication, 4. Peer supports, and 5. Trust. Barriers included 1. Limited communication training or skills, 2. Lack of standardized care or information, 3. Insufficient real-time credible resources, 4. Perceived links with organ donation, 5. Time constraints, and 6. Diagnostic confusion. Participants recommended toolkits incorporating plain language explanations, for example, infographics, free online resources, and peer support. Conclusions. Our findings confirm that layperson understanding of brain death and death by neurologic criteria is limited, even for patient and family advisory council members. Family understanding and experiences during this emotionally challenging time might be improved with 1. Clinician training and clear and culturally responsible communication, 2. Online educational resources, and 3. Consistent institutional support. Abstract 2 is a featured original research article by Acevedo et al. Outcome of severe adenoviral respiratory infection supported with extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, a multi-center PICU study from Colombia from 2018 to 2022. Objectives: to compare survival, clinical characteristics, complications, and duration of extracorporeal membrane oxygenation or ECMO support in pediatric patients with severe adenoviral respiratory infections versus those with other viral respiratory infections. Design: multicenter retrospective observational study. Setting: 7 PICUs in Colombia, South America. Patients: children 1 month to 18 years old who received ECMO support between January 2018 and December 2022. The primary outcome was survival in children with severe adenoviral infection requiring ECMO compared with those with ECMO due to other viral respiratory infections. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. A total of 205 patients were included. 39% or 80 of 205 had adenoviral infections, and 61% or 125 of 205 had other viral respiratory infections. We failed to find an association between the adenovirus group versus the non-adenovirus group and 28-day survival. 62 of 80 or 77.6% in the adenovirus group versus 92 of 125 or 73.6% in the non-adenovirus group with a p-value equal to 0.513. Independent pre-ECMO factors associated with greater odds of mortality across both groups included vasoactive inotropic score greater than 15, arterial pH less than 7.2, and time from meeting ECMO criteria to actual cannulation greater than 13 hours. The adjusted odds ratio for vasoactive inotropic score greater than 15 was 3.18 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.08 to 7.45. The adjusted odds ratio for arterial pH less than 7.2 was 3.79 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.75 to 5.552. And the adjusted odds ratio for time from meeting ECMO criteria to actual cannulation was 4.04 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.72 to 7.21. Hemorrhagic complications occurred in 81 of 205 or 40% of all patients, and CNS hemorrhage and cannulation site bleeding were the most common locations of bleeding. Greater odds of hemorrhagic complication were associated with age younger than 36 months, previous severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2 infection, ECMO duration greater than 10 days, and use of continuous renal replacement therapy during ECMO. Conclusions. In pediatric patients with severe adenoviral infections requiring ECMO support, compared with those with other viral infections requiring ECMO, we failed to identify associated greater odds of mortality. Key factors associated with greater odds of mortality included pre-ECMO acidosis, high vasoactive inotropic score, and greater than 13-hour delay in initiating ECMO support. Abstract 3 is a featured original research article by Dorn et al. Bivalirudin monitoring using dilute thrombin time in pediatric extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, single center retrospective cost analysis from 2018 to 2023. Objectives. The parenteral anticoagulant bivalirudin has favorable safety and efficacy outcomes compared with unfractionated heparin in pediatric patients requiring extracorporeal membrane oxygenation or ECMO, and is frequently monitored using the activated partial thromboplastin time or APTT. Our group has demonstrated that the dilute thrombin time, or DTT, provides superior reliability compared with the APTT for bivalirudin monitoring, but there is a concern without access to using DTT and its cost. We report a comparative cost analysis of monitoring ECMO patients anticoagulated with bivalirudin or unfractionated heparin. Design. Retrospective analysis of total number of laboratory tests ordered at various time points during ECMO. 5, 7, 10, 14, and 21 days using 2024 institutional list prices for each test. Setting: single center quaternary care ICUs at Cincinnati Children's Hospital and Medical Center, or CCHMC. Patients included children younger than 18 years supported on ECMO in our ICUs, anticoagulated with unfractionated heparin, N equal to 46, or bivalirudin, N equal to 30, between January 2018 and August 2023. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The total number of tests ordered, including complete blood count, prothrombin time, APTT, fibrinogen, and antithrombin 3, were lower in patients receiving bivalirudin compared with unfractionated heparin across multiple time points of ECMO. In comparison with unfractionated heparin, use of bivalirudin was associated with fewer total tests ordered and lower costs at both early and late time points. At CCHMC, DTT can be run at equivalent costs to APTT. Conclusions. From 2018 to 2023, use of DTT monitoring for bivalirudin rather than APTT monitoring for unfractionated heparin during ECMO was associated with decreased laboratory testing and cost and is available on an automated or semi-automated platform. Overall, our data support the use of DTT-monitored bivalirudin during ECMO support, which is cost-efficient and may lead to reduction in total laboratory testing and blood volume sampling. Abstract 4 is a featured original research article by Takayama et al. Japanese version of the quality of dying and death in the PICU instrument, development and validation in 8 centers in Japan. Objectives. The quality of dying and death of children in the PICU is essential for them, their families, and carers at the end of life. Currently, there are no standard instruments for measuring quality of dying and death in PICUs in Japan. We have developed a Japanese version of PICU Quality of Dying and Death instrument, which has been culturally adapted to the Japanese context and evaluated its psychometric validity. Design. The study comprised 2 phases. 1. Development of the PICU Quality of Dying and Death Japan instrument, conducted with input from experts, clinicians, and bereaved families. And 2. A multi-center prospective cross-sectional validation involving PICU clinicians. Data for the validation phase were collected between May 2023 and June 2024. Setting: 8 PICUs in Japan. Participants, we recruited 231 clinicians, including 112 physicians and 119 nurses, who provided end-of-life care for 65 children in the PICU and their families. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. The PICU Quality of Dying and Death Japan instrument was developed through forward-backward translation, reviewed by a panel of 5 experts, and evaluated by 12 clinicians and 7 bereaved family members. The PICU Quality of Dying and Death Japan instrument comprises 21 items and demonstrated acceptable internal consistency, with Kronbach's alpha equal to 0.92, and good test-retest reliability with intra-class correlation coefficient of 0.77 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.64 to 0.85. The inter-rater reliability was low, 0.09, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.06 to 0.13. Standardized PICU Quality of Dying and Death Japan instrument scores showed moderate positive correlations, with an R equal to 0.42 to 0.57 and a p-value less than 0.001, with evaluations of overall quality of end-of-life care, quality of the moment of death, and fulfillment of family needs supporting good construct validity. Conclusions. The PICU Quality of Dying and Death Japan instrument demonstrated good reliability and validity and can be used to assess and improve end-of-life care in PICUs in Japan. However, given the low inter-rater reliability, evaluation should be interpreted from multiple perspectives rather than a single assessment. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation article by Dimopoulos et al. Arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury in critically ill children. Evidence of endothelial dysfunction and immune dysregulation. Objectives. Arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury is a rare but serious complication in critically ill pediatric patients who require arterial access. In a cohort of critically ill children with multiple organ dysfunction syndrome, we investigated proteomic differences in children who developed arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury with the aim of identifying mechanistic pathways that may contribute to the pathogenesis of this complication. We hypothesized that the plasma proteome at multiple organ dysfunction onset would differ between children who later develop arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury and those who do not. Design. Single-center cohort study of pediatric patients with multiple organ dysfunction syndrome defined by modified Pearl criteria who underwent arterial catheter placement. We obtained plasma samples within 48 hours of multiple organ dysfunction syndrome onset. Grading of arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury was completed by the hospital vascular access team using standardized criteria. Proteomic analysis was performed using Olink proximity extension assay. Gene set enrichment analysis was used to identify mechanistic pathways enriched in arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury cases. Setting, single-center academic PICU. Patients, pediatric patients with multiple organ dysfunction syndrome and arterial access at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia from January 2020 to December 2022. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 5 of 66, or 7.6%, of multiple organ dysfunction syndrome patients with arterial access developed arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury. Age, severity of illness, and organ dysfunction profiles did not differ between injured and non-injured patients. 6 pathways of immune dysregulation involving signal transducer and activator of transcription signaling and cytokine-mediated apoptosis were enriched in patients with arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury, with a p-value less than 0.0001. 5 pathways associated with endothelial dysfunction were also significantly altered in arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury patients, with a p-value less than 0.0001. Differential expression analysis identified 18 plasma proteins associated with injury after adjustment for age and severity of illness with a false discovery rate p-value less than 0.05, supporting the hypothesis that endothelial injury and immune dysregulation may contribute to arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury pathogenesis. Conclusions. In a small pediatric cohort, we identified pathways of immune dysregulation and endothelial dysfunction associated with arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury. Because these factors precede arterial catheter-associated proximal ischemic injury, there may be a window for treatment. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation article by Jarvis et al. The Critical Illness Recovery for Children, or CIRCLE program, Single-Center Multidisciplinary Model of Care from 2021 to 2023. Objectives: to report the development and evaluation of the Critical Illness Recovery for Children, or CIRCLE, personalized program, which is a new model of care to improve child and family outcomes. Design: Single-Center Quality Improvement Initiative. Setting: a 36-bed PICU and outpatient multidisciplinary clinic. Patients: during September 2021 to June 2023, we recruited English-speaking families and caregivers of children younger than 18 years who were admitted to the PICU with new acquired brain injury, need for extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or acute respiratory distress syndrome requiring invasive mechanical ventilation for 48 hours or more. Interventions: families received multidisciplinary longitudinal support, including education, outcome monitoring, resources, and referrals from PICU admission through to clinic follow-up 1 to 3 months post-discharge. Measurements and main results: the primary outcome was program satisfaction. Secondary outcomes were clinic attendance, caregiver measure completion, new functional impairments at follow-up, identified by caregiver reported outcomes or electronic health record derived functional status scale score, and healthcare utilization abstracted from the electronic health record. 98 families participated. 63 of 96 survivors, or 66%, were offered clinic follow-up, and 51 of 63, or 81%, attended. Of 18 responding caregivers, 17 reported that CIRCLE improved their hospitalization experience, and 16 reported that CIRCLE provided value for their family. Measure completion ranged from 66 of 98 at baseline to 25 of 96 at follow-up. 88 families had complete functional outcome data. 55 of 88, or 63%, had one or more new functional impairment. 81 of 96 survivors, or 84%, had one or more specialty follow-up appointments scheduled with a median of 2 specialties in an interquartile range of 1 to 3. 28 of 96 survivors, or 29%, had hospital readmission within 6 months. Conclusions: the CIRCLE personalized program satisfied the majority of responding families. Opportunities to improve follow-up and outcome monitoring were identified. Frequency of new functional impairments and healthcare utilization support the need for coordinated PICU follow-up care. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation article by Rabinowitz et al. Impaired oxygen delivery risk analytics in the 6 hours before extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, single-center retrospective cohort study in infants from 2013 to 2017. Objectives: we evaluate the association between pre-extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO, markers of impaired oxygen delivery as quantified by the Impaired Oxygen Delivery Index, or IDO2, and neurologic outcomes in infants supported on ECMO. Design: a single-center retrospective cohort study using demographic and clinical data along with IDO2 metrics calculated at 120-minute intervals before ECMO initiation. Primary outcomes included mortality, electroencephalography abnormalities, and head imaging findings. The secondary outcomes included brain MRI abnormalities and functional status score, or FSS, at discharge. Setting: pediatric ECMO center in North America. Patients: we included infants younger than 1 year old who were supported on ECMO between 2013 and 2017. We excluded cases with congenital diaphragmatic hernia or post-cardiac surgery ECMO. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results: we identified 47 infants meeting the inclusion criteria. Median age and weight at ECMO initiation were 16 days with an interquartile range of 6 to 112 days and 3.3 kilograms with an interquartile range of 2.8 to 4.8 kilograms. The overall mortality was 26 of 47, or 55%, with a 95% confidence interval of 41 to 69%. Non-survival compared with survival was associated with a greater proportion of patients with congenital heart disease, with a p-value equal to 0.03, and pre-ECMO cardiac arrest, with a p-value equal to 0.006. Time spent above impaired oxygen delivery index thresholds of 25%, 50%, and 75% increased closer to ECMO initiation. Higher impaired oxygen delivery index dose correlated with adverse neurologic outcomes, including electroencephalography abnormalities and abnormal imaging. Last, a logistic regression model for poor outcome, which was the composite of death and functional status score, including the time spent above the three impaired oxygen delivery index thresholds at the three time intervals pre-ECMO, showed classification model performance with an area under the receiver operating characteristic curve of 0.81, with a 95% confidence interval of 0.7 to 0.92, and a p-value equal to 0.0002. Conclusions. Markers of impaired oxygen delivery, such as impaired oxygen delivery index in the 6 hours before ECMO, are associated with subsequent outcome. Incorporation of these metrics into clinical decision support systems need to be prospectively tested and evaluated. Abstract 8 is a PCCM technical note by Williams et al. In-series continuous renal replacement therapy and therapeutic plasma exchange, single-center retrospective cohort from 2018 to 2022. Objectives: to describe our use and experience with an in-series approach for patients requiring both continuous renal replacement therapy, or CRRT, as well as therapeutic plasma exchange, or TPE. Design: retrospective review of case notes. Setting: general and cardiac PICUs at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne, Australia. Patients included children 0 to 18 years old requiring both CRRT and TPE between 2018 and 2022. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 12 children were successfully and safely treated with 32 TPE sessions and 38 CRRT sessions with our in-series CRRT and TPE setup using a total of 20 extracorporeal circuits and 11 additional plasma filters or hemofilters. This represents a reduction of 71% in standard circuit usage. Conclusions. Our approach to providing in-series CRRT and TPE used existing access and circuits, a single device, and resulted in efficient treatments, reduced infection risk, reduced exposure to circuits, less hemodilution, and less blood product use. Small potential cost and waste reductions were also achieved. This approach was performed safely with no unexpected adverse events. Abstract 9 is a PCCM trial by Peters et al. The Pediatric Intensive Care Adaptive Platform Trial, or PIVOTAL, Turning Pediatric Critical Care Practice into Clinical Research. Objectives: to describe the rationale, design, and implementation of the Pediatric Intensive Care Adaptive Platform Trial, or PIVOTAL, a novel approach to embed adaptive clinical research within routine pediatric critical care practice. Design: prospective, multi-center, Bayesian adaptive platform trial developed by the UK Pediatric Critical Care Society Study Group, or PCCSSG, and funded by the UK National Institute for Health and Care Research Health Technology Assessment Program. Setting: a minimum of 20 of the 33 PICUs across the United Kingdom participating in the PCCSSG Research Network. Patients: critically ill children admitted to a PICU requiring support for one or more organ systems. Interventions: eligible patients will be randomized across multiple concurrent intervention domains. Each domain will test clinically relevant therapies where practice variation and evidence gaps exist. The adaptive Bayesian design allows dynamic modification of randomization ratios, dropping of inferior interventions, and addition of new domains over time. Measurements and main results. The primary outcome, common to all domains, is days alive and free of organ support to day 30. Trial efficiency and inclusivity are enhanced using routinely collected national registry data from the Pediatric Intensive Care Audit Network, real-time electronic health record integration, and a proportionate consent model. Extensive statistical simulations will inform decision rules for superiority, futility, and equivalence. Conclusions. PIVOTAL aims to bridge the gap between clinical care and research, providing a sustainable infrastructure to deliver timely, inclusive, and practice-changing evidence in pediatric critical care. Recruitment started in March 2026. Abstract 10 is a PCCM trial by Viola et al. Protocolized evaluation of permissive blood pressure targets versus usual care, or pressure, statistical analysis plan for the pressure trial. Objective: to describe the pre-specified analysis plan for protocolized evaluation of permissive blood pressure targets versus usual care, or pressure, a trial comparing a permissive mean arterial pressure target above the age-specific 5th percentile with usual care in critically ill children. Design: pragmatic, open, multicenter, parallel group randomized control trial with integrated economic evaluation. Setting: 21 PICUs in the United Kingdom. Patients. Infants and children older than 38 weeks corrected gestational age to 16 years accepted to a participating PICU on invasive mechanical ventilation and receiving vasoactive drugs for hypotension. Intervention. Adjustment of hemodynamic support to achieve a permissive mean arterial pressure target greater than the 5th percentile for age during invasive mechanical ventilation. Measurements and main results. The primary outcome is a composite 30-day mortality and duration of invasive mechanical ventilation, and it will be analyzed with a two-sample rank sum test. Components will also be analyzed separately. Sensitivity analyses will adjust for adherence, and subgroup analyses will test interactions with baseline covariates. Secondary analyses will compare mortality at various time points, duration of survival, time to liberation from invasive mechanical ventilation, functional status changes, receipt of renal replacement therapy, and length of stay. The health economic analysis will follow the intention to treat principle and report the mean incremental cost with a 95% confidence interval, quality adjusted life years, and cost effectiveness up to 12 months. Conclusions. Results will be reported following this plan through peer-reviewed publications and conference presentations. The PCCM narrative this month is by Dr. Elena Lorenzana, entitled Extubate Patient. This poem was inspired by the poem Why Doctors Write by Rafael Campo, a poem which always inspires me to write. The lines, "The ICU is like a code we think we can decipher," and "We put the stethoscope on you one last time like punctuation," are direct references to lines in that poem. It is about the fragility of being a trainee caring for a very sick patient and the feeling of incapability that happens when you anticipate a patient is going to succumb to their illness. It is about a patient I took care of as a senior resident on the general pediatrics floor who ultimately ended up transferring to the ICU and passing away. It's about the feeling of helplessness of knowing in my heart that this patient was dying and still trying to do everything in my power to save him. It's about the poetry of witnessing his compassionate extubation from a computer screen, from watching the order go in and the death note be signed. I think writing this poem was a way for me to process those feelings of incapability I initially felt in caring for such a critically ill patient in what I felt like was an under-supported role and the trauma that came with feeling like I failed. When I look back on that scenario and reread this poem now, I see just how capable I was and how much my training has prepared me to be the kind of doctor I want to be. Like Campo writes, "A doctor writes a poem in the chart. I open his chart every now and then when I need a reminder of why we do what we do." Extubate patient. You never asked if we were capable enough, even when your death was something silent in the air, self-evident, the pulse that dripped soft and slow from your skin, the ventilator that gently undulated your chest. The ICU is like a code we think we can decipher. Our uncertain vigil of the body's resilience amid the promise of death, the choreography of your death. A doctor writes an order in the chart, extubate patient. And I watch the lines plummet to zero from the safety of a screen, only to prove to myself what I already knew, that you wouldn't last 30 minutes with or without me. From the hospital bed, we put the stethoscope on you one last time, like punctuation. And I learned what it means to break. It's okay. I think I did what I can, even when I wasn't capable enough. This concludes the abstracts for the June 2026 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.